is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, more October surprises as we just get into a new month as the campaign really changes up completely here with the president's announcements of COVID. That has sent ripples certainly around the nation and around the world. A lot of information, and quite frankly, a lot of it is misinformation. We'll try to set that record straight today on Viewpoint. Also, there is the case of the Supreme Court Justice, if she does become that Amy Coney Barrett, and that confirmation, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says that is full steam ahead and not a delay. And that's become very politicized, as you know, and talk more about that. Ballot harvesting. I don't know if you've seen this story, actually. The Supreme Court reviews, they've agreed to review Arizona's voting rules on this ballot harvesting, and this could have some implications around the nation as well. We're seeing a lot of dangerous things there. And on the dangerous point, have an interesting energy bill I want to tell you about today that, if this is passed, will change the way we do business in our nation. That's a very interesting story. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And don't forget our entire second hour with Michael Johns will be a little bit later in the program. Let's get started here at the top of the program here with Dr. Jane Orient. She is the Executive Director of the AAPS, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. She's President of Doctors for Disaster Preparedness and a General Internal Medicine Specialist in Tucson, Arizona. So the president now is at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. And Bloomberg says the fact that Trump, who is wary of doctors, agreed to go to Walter Reed is a sign of concern about his condition. So I ask you to start with, is this more precautionary, you think, because he is president, or is this a sign that COVID is having a bigger impact on President Trump?
I think it's impossible to know exactly what's going on. It does seem really strange that from one minute of just having a positive test and having the mild symptoms, he's all of a sudden whisked off in a helicopter to the hospital. He's given an experimental drug, and I think another experimental drug, remdesivir, and one doesn't know. All this for mild symptoms? Very peculiar.
Yeah, so I'm wondering as well. See, you're saying the same thing I'm thinking here, how peculiar. That's why I was hoping you might help me clear it up, because it does seem peculiar, doesn't it? The fact that this is all happening like this, it may be sending the wrong signal out to a lot of people who there's a lot of, they say, bad information out there. But you don't, I mean, could this just be precautionary because he is president, or are they overdoing the treatment at this point? We really don't know that, do we?
Well, we don't. We do know that both treatments have severe side effects, particularly remdesivir. It has a toxic effect on many organs. It is generally reserved only for the late stage of illness. And there, it's not been clearly demonstrated to have any effect at all on mortality, but only on possibly shortening the course of the disease by a few days. So a lot of people are thinking this may not really be the best treatment for the president.
Why do you think that? I was wondering that, and I was wondering what you would tell me. Now, there are a lot of things that there was a lot of speculation right away on this thing. First off, the initial diagnosis that we were getting reports on, they were very mild, the things that were happening to him, the implications of this. He did that short video, of course. But I started hearing immediately, Dr. Orient, things like convalescent plasma was one thing. And of course, you know, then the remdesivir, as you say. And I wondered myself, knowing what I know, was that the right treatment? Now, they also said zinc, vitamin D, and there was a series of other things as well they were giving him in this antibody treatment here. There was mention in the media that maybe he would do HCQ again, but I haven't heard anything about that. So let's talk about the treatment plan. Somebody like this who gets into a situation where they contract COVID like this, your question, I mean, we don't really know if this is the right plan for him, do we?
We really don't. And once a person's in the hospital, it's hard to find out what's going on, and you don't really have any control as a family member, or maybe even as the patient, as to what the hospital protocol is. Most doctors that I know would think that very early on, you want to treat with something benign, safe, long established, like hydroxychloroquine plus zinc, plus azithromycin. We know the president has spoken in favor of that, but we know that there has been a war on against this drug. In the administration, very powerful and influential people are trying to keep that drug from getting to people. And quite successfully, our lawsuit, I mean, the AAPS lawsuit against it has just gotten rejected, our motion for an emergency injunction was rejected to get the FDA to release the strategic national stockpile of hydroxychloroquine. The evidence is piling up. Last I checked, there were 127 studies on C19study.com, at least half of them peer-reviewed, and they show a very favorable effect early in the course of the disease, less favorable late in the course of the disease. But side effects are really very rare. This has been used safely for over 65 years. The evidence, if you look at the cardiac effects, which are supposed to be so dreadful, is that they're extremely rare, and that most of the time, hydroxychloroquine actually protects the heart.
Yeah, and whereas there are signs, as you say, with remdesivir that does other damage to various organs, and yet that's what they're using. In with the politicization of this here, I mean, it sounds not really proper, but he may be getting still bad information for those around him because of the politicization of this. That's what you're concerned with, isn't it?
Well, I'm concerned that there are a lot of conflicts of interest in the highest levels of government, the FDA, the CDC, with Gilead Science, the maker of remdesivir. I guess the government already bought 3 months of production that haven't even occurred yet of that drug at a very expensive price of more than $3,000 per course of treatment. And I'm sure the company is going to raise that later if it proves successful. And then all of the attempts to suppress even information about preventive and early treatment like vitamin D, it'll get squelched from the social media for being harmful misinformation, even though it drastically reduces the death rate, probably from all respiratory illnesses. So it is very frightening that we cannot get reliable information because it's being controlled at a higher level by people with pervasive conflicts of interest.
The one thing now is this has certainly raised the stakes here in this campaign, to say the least. I want to talk to you about something that has been very perplexing to me. I see a report here just yesterday, new U.S. coronavirus cases jump about 50,000 as more people close to President Trump test positive. And again, we just talked about the GOP circles of all those people getting it. We don't really know the original source of that, but it's out there clearly. So this report was compiled from Johns Hopkins University. It was more than 54,000 new U.S. cases were reported Friday, the most since August 14th. Now, the media headlines have continually made the story, the number of cases, and there is talk in the Biden campaign about another national lockdown, still talking about that. What I'm wondering is, how do we reconcile that with the point of wanting herd immunity so that this becomes more and more like the common flu, is what I understand. And I'm just wondering, how do we reconcile all this? You know, I'm wondering, Dr. Orion, if we had locked down our country for 8 months, let's say we did something extreme and we say, you know, we're going to lock it down for 8 months, lock everything up, stay home, and then we'll all come back. The sun will be shining and everybody will be just fine. I mean, that just doesn't sound realistic.
Already, 130 million people in the world will probably starve because of the lockdowns we've already had. And what is a case? It used to be that a case was somebody who was sick. Now, a case is somebody who has a positive PCR, it's a polymerase chain reaction test, that may be wildly inaccurate. There are huge numbers of false positives. If you do 100 million tests, even if you have a supposedly low false positive rate of 1%, that's a huge number of cases. And then who knows who died with COVID as opposed to from COVID? I think the only accurate statistic is all-cause mortality, and that is a back down to normal. And like the UK and Germany, they're talking about lockdowns, and they have a second wave of cases, but the number of deaths is still very, very low from COVID-19. That has barely jumped, if at all. So we're reacting to a test which may be false positive, or it may be for a disease that will be very mild or asymptomatic, and that will cause the person to become immune and get over it, just as if it were a common cold, and then protect us against further outbreaks.
That's exactly it right there. But don't we legitimately, I mean, want more cases? I mean, is that right or wrong? Do we want less or more cases? If we're going to get over the hurdle, and this is what I don't reconcile. Do we want more or less cases?
Well, we want fewer people to die and fewer people to get really, really sick.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't usually die or get really sick from the cold because we have immunity to that. And it's just circulating everywhere. To think that we are going to get rid of this virus at this point is just magical thinking. It is here. It's going to be endemic. And the only way we're going to survive it is by becoming immune to it. And I think if you can do things to improve your immunity, like making sure you're not vitamin D deficient, which most people are, making sure you're not zinc deficient, which a lot of people are, and just using good common sense about hygiene and avoiding places where you're going to be around a lot of people who might be sick, especially if you're one who would be quite susceptible to the disease.
Yeah. Thank you for what you just said there, too. And it's a good warning for everybody to understand the vitamin D and the zinc is something we can all do. We can get that over the counter and that will help our system out as well. That's good advice for everybody. But clearly, you've cleared up what I was hoping you would, which was that having a certain amount of cases is not a bad thing. Yet they continue to put the headlines out about these cases. And it's very, very discouraging to me because they're scaring the public is what's happening. And the public now with Trump, I just sense this. And I wonder if you sense it as well, Dr. Orient, that people are already, many are anyways, a percentage of Americans are in a frenzy already over this. And I think these headlines, the media is driving this horrible narrative. It is already out there. You can't put this back in the genie bottle. It's going to run its course now, but locking up is not the answer, is it?
Well, it isn't. And the lockdowns or no lockdowns different countries have had different policies seems to make no difference really in the course of the disease. And sometimes lockdowns have been imposed after the things are deaths are already on the downswing, and then they can say, well, they can take credit for that. But even in New York, 60% of the people who became sick had been locked down at home and had been going out very little, if at all. And so it didn't seem to work. All it's doing is killing the economy in New York, but it probably has done nothing at all to save lives.
That's exactly it. And again, you can't reconcile the two. You either want herd immunity and get down the road on this thing or you don't. I just don't see. I think it's a bit of a trickery here going on, and I don't like it. This lack of information and truthfulness that's out there. Are you concerned? I've heard things about this virus mutating as well. And I hear it's done that, and as all viruses do, a series of times. But there shouldn't be any concerns that it mutates in a more terrible form or something, right?
It could mutate either way. It's an RNA virus. They mutate a lot.
Okay.
They don't replicate themselves very accurately. And any mutation could either be lethal to the virus or could make the virus more lethal. And this is unpredictable and uncontrollable. So I think we really need these non-specific things to improve your own immunity. And by the way, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, these are sort of non-specific. They affect the biochemistry inside the cell. They aren't targeted to one specific virus. And they may have a broader spectrum. This may be one good outcome of this epidemic, is we're going to find out that these viral diseases that we thought were untreatable really are, with this very common 65-year-old medicine.
So you recommend it. There's no harm in taking that as the president did to stay in good health prophylactically. You don't, I mean, that's a good thing, right?
People have taken it prophylactically for years to prevent malaria. They're still doing that. They used to put it and salt or chloroquine, which is a less safe form of form of the drug, and it's put it in salt in India as a malaria prophylactic.
Yeah, so I mean, the evidence is there clearly. It's been there for a lot of years. This is not new information, but yet it's relevant information. And it's so difficult to get this in the proper context, which is why I was so excited to have you on to set the record straight today on this. Now, I want to ask this other big story, please, about, wearing a mask. Now, you and I have talked about this some time ago here, but I have to bring this up now because speaking in Michigan, Joe Biden, the Democrat presidential candidate who is really talking about a national lockdown again and all, he wants to, he's on record of saying a lot of things about this, but he just said here on Friday that he would recommend a national mask mandate is what he's suggesting as some sort of an answer to this thing. And yet when you go and you look back at what he has said prior, he came out and he had said, and I quote here, "So let's just institute a mask mandate nationwide starting immediately. And we will save, the estimates are that we'll save 40,000 lives in the next 3 months." And then he came out and said, no, he said that it would probably be unconstitutional, he says. Then he comes out and says, yes, the federal powers would be difficult to force people to wear masks, but we should do a national mandate. I mean, the information coming from that campaign, you can't wrap your head around here exactly. But I mean, obviously, this is very political, I guess. But what is your really honest, true feelings, you yourself, as your own health and well-being or your family members, as far as wearing a mask? I get the sense it may not be effective. What do you say?
I would say there is no evidence that public wearing of masks is effective. The disease rates don't seem to be correlated at all with the introduction of mask mandates. The public usually wears them improperly, inappropriately. They're wearing the equivalent of a snotty handkerchief in front of their face, and it probably does more harm than good. But never mind what Joe Biden says. Look at the WHO and the CDC. They're all contradicting themselves all over the place also. If you look at the scientific evidence, there just really is no evidence basis for saying that making the public wear masks does any good. And we've had children dropping dead in China and in Germany while they're wearing masks while exercising. I mean, it's just really crazy to be wearing a mask out of doors.
Yeah, and I'm seeing that as well. I mean, every single day I see people driving in cars by themselves with masks. I mean, right now I'm talking, this isn't months ago, but it's happening all the time. They're out exercising, as you say, they're riding bicycles, they're jogging with masks on. It's like these people, there's been some twisted media information that this drumbeat, Dr. Orient, that's been put out there that really has done a reverse effect on people. There's so much. I mean, this is, I think, the most concerning to me. That's got to frustrate you as a physician and knowing the truth about this. You've got to be frustrated with the news cycle.
It really is frustrating. But even more so, people's response to this. I mean, the news cycle is contradicting itself, but the people still believe it. I mean, I guess they have to try to figure out how to change their beliefs day after day.
Any thoughts to how quickly he could possibly get over this and where we get to the other, where he gets to the other side, gets back out in campaign and that sort of thing? Any thoughts to that?
Well, I just don't know. I mean, it's not just the course of the disease, and we don't know what that is, but it's the effect of the side effects of these experimental drugs
that they're giving him, which do, like you say, that could be a risk factor in itself. Well, a lot of uncertainties there. Big thank you to Dr. Jane Orient. And up next, friends, we've got a big story with Colonel Jim Warshak, and we'll talk about this implication of the DNI, John Ratcliffe. This is quite something, this story. It's totally been under the radar. We're going to bring it up outside of the radar here. And this is with the Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and what has transpired through all of these last many, many years. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
For the war on America's cities and claims of racism in the ranks of law enforcement have spirited a renewed debate on racial equality. It was Alexis de Tocqueville who reminded us, Americans are so enamored of equality, they would rather be equal in slavery than unequal in freedom. To which I say, be warned of the shiny object, America. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, it's a fight for the soul of humanity. When the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, implicated Hillary Clinton in the plot against Donald Trump. This really was a bombshell story, but quickly fell off the radar because it had no legs or exposure for the media because it didn't fit their narrative at all. Just about zero time was spent on this on any of the networks. So really, the majority of Americans have no idea this story even happened. Well, I've done a full program on this with Colonel Jim Warshak, a very striking program, one you must listen to. I'll tell you more about how you can listen to the full program, but listen next to the excerpt from this wide-reaching interview I had with Colonel Jim Warshak. I mean, you don't brief the president. The president creates the chart of a... Let's be clear here. Nobody's saying this, and I think it's important to put... The president, he is the commander. He is the pilot. He has his hands on the wheel. You don't go in and just brief the president. By the way, we decided to go ahead and take down the Trump campaign. What the hell? We thought we had nothing better to do on a Friday afternoon, press. Is that okay? You know, I mean, you're not kind of doing that. These orders have to come from the top. The president, there's not, to me, it does not do it justice when all these stories come out or the DNI say, well, but Obama was briefed. Hell, Obama wasn't. Obama was, he was creating the chart of orders here. I mean, you tell me for a moment that these clowns around the president and his cabinet and all these people, the only way you would be briefing a president is if the president created the orders for you to go do all of this, or you wouldn't be briefing a damn president. Now, tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. The president sets the course, and his senior officials who are in charged or charged with running that, whether it was Comey or Loretta Lynch or, you know, John Brennan and a number of other people, Clapper, they all had a role in this and they all had a particular job. And when you're in that kind of situation and the president is aware of it, part of the responsibility of those is to keep him abreast of what's going on. Now, if these folks went and did it on their own, and they may have initially said, we got to do something about it. Here's the plan. Someone is going to tell the president, here's what they're planning on doing. Now, if the president has even the minuscule degree of integrity, gets wind of that, or is told, maybe his chief of staff tells him, or, you know, maybe the department, the attorney general tells him,
he would stop.
If he's got any integrity, he's going to say, what the hell are you doing? No, we're not going to do that. Stop it right now. That's the end. And might even fire the individual for even bringing that to him. I didn't see any of that happening. He went along, and now we know through the various pieces of information that have been put out, which is legit, because it all goes along and fits the narrative. And I mean, you get into the in-depth of how Brennan and Clinton manufactured the story and who they went to get to do to write the Steele dossier to come up with. You know, that was the most ridiculous story to put out. I mean, as soon as you read it, you know, I can remember years ago when I first read it about the president in Moscow, I'm like, come on, that's just so bizarre. That alone should have ended it, but you know, they went along with it. And when you get into the details now, the key thing, and you mentioned it, were July 2016. This was in the works well before that. The idea behind it, maybe the first briefing and maybe the first draft of a lot of this came into play then, but it had been in the works well before. I knew in April 16 from my discussions with two individuals who are names in this, they were well aware of it. This went into play the minute it looked like Trump was going to be the nominee, and by the time he was the designated nominee for the Republican Party in March 16, that's when this stuff really started to go, yep, you know, full bore. But I believe some of it may have even been in the works, because a lot of people by January 16 were saying, you know, Trump could probably win. So they win the nomination for the Republican Party. A lot of people then, you know, be it Comey and Clapper and Brennan, may have already started thinking and talking about it. That's small potatoes from the standpoint of where we are now. But
that's right.
This just didn't happen. And yeah, the president just didn't get briefed on a whim because somebody thought he should know. He was fully aware.
Well, he was not only aware, but this was his grand plan, because as you just stated a moment ago here, Donald Trump was really moving up into the polls and the system, and he was becoming a threat to a Hillary Clinton presidency. And now all of the progress, I mean, call it whatever you want, people, progress by their standards, sure. But it really is an un-American story on the face of President Barack Obama, whether you liked his policies or not. I mean, what we're revealing here and talking about is he was up to no good. I mean, and you know, you could see they would have a meeting in the White House or at some disclosed place, and they would be talking about this at the highest level. And this was obviously concocted from that standpoint and put out with his cabinet and others to stop the rise of Donald Trump and to secure the presidency of Hillary Clinton. Now, this is a big deal, because this tells you where the American people overrode what the wishes of the former president were and those cabinet people and others who were carrying out his wishes. And I would say to you, this is exactly what Barack Obama's plan. This was a cover-up at the highest order.
Part of it, just look at the Mike Flynn situation, where Sullivan is just dragging his feet on this. They don't want Mike Flynn out there. They don't want him out there because he knows too much. And once he's free, the muzzle's off and he can talk, and he's going to go on a speaking tour like there's no tomorrow, revealing what's going on. That's the only reason. That's the whole reason they did what they did to him.
Yeah.
You know, so here we are 30 days out from the election. A lot of information has come out. A lot of things have been happening. The president has to go through the final hurdles the last 30 days to win. And then a number of people indicted. I find it interesting that there's a new investigation started on Hillary. That's been one of the things that people have been calling for. When are they going to go after Hillary? Well, it looks like Durham is doing something on that. What comes out of that and what the intent behind it is, could be a lot of things. It could be reason to pressure more people to speak up. We know that a number of people have flipped in the last several months to Durham, and they're talking. So this is the kind of thing that we're going to be seeing in the next few months.
Well, the full program is quite revealing, my friends, and you can hear that on Monday on my weekly show, The Voice of the Nation. You'll catch it every Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. 10 p.m. is the encore. Now, you'll hear this program in its entirety, and we cover a lot of ground in here. A few points of interest. Bottom line, number one, Hillary Clinton did manufacture a Russian collusion scheme against Donald Trump. Amazing. Number two, the CIA director, John Brennan, I mean, he did more than brief Obama, as you heard me saying. He was in cahoots with Obama. And the FBI director, James Comey, he was absolutely central to this entire conversation. I think it's quite an explosive program, and it's one we need to stay on here together at America Out Loud. There needs to be some indictments here with this far-reaching case. We'll talk more about it Monday. Tune in, The Voice of the Nation, on Monday, 6 in 10, and we'll have the full story for you with Colonel Jim Warshaw. So let's get on now with the rest of Viewpoint. Dr. Jay Lehrer, Tom Harris will be up next. We'll talk about a lot of different stories, including the Supreme Court confirmation, Amy Coney Barrett, the ballot harvesting that is happening, and then the Supreme Court ruling in Arizona, you see, as well. And this very dangerous energy bill we want to fill you in on, that's most important you contact your senators on that. Requires a little action from all of us. Stay right there, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
So Amy Coney Barrett, the Supreme Court confirmation will move forward. So Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell confirms. Now, there is a lot of political shenanigans going on right now with this. And we'll talk about a little bit that here. But here's what he puts out there, the Majority Leader. He says, the plan is for the nomination to come out of the committee on October the 22nd, as Chairman Lindsey Graham has indicated, McConnell says, and we will be voting on the nominee very soon. So he says, listen, I haven't picked an exact point to bring the nomination up yet, but it is front and center for the American people. As we move ahead, I will be more specific on the precise time on the Senate floor. So this, again, gets very, very political. Let me bring on now here Dr. Jay Lehrer. And Dr. Jay is a political analyst, is a senior policy analyst, also with the International Climate Science Coalition, former science director of the Heartland Institute. Okay, Dr. Jay, so let me give you the political ramifications of this and, you know, where this kind of goes. So Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer and Senate Judiciary Committee ranking member Dianne Feinstein, California. She said any plans to hold a hearing at this time could be dangerous. And I quote, this is their quote, it is premature for Chairman Graham to commit to a hearing schedule when we do not know the full extent of political exposure stemming from the president's infection and before the White House puts in place a contact tracing plan to prevent further spread of the disease. This is the talking point coming, Jay, from the opposing group there that don't want this to move forward. Obviously sounds quite political, doesn't it?
Well, you would expect nothing different. I think I probably could have written their speeches. They want to stop the president from being reelected. They want to get rid of him, and they don't want him to leave any more of a wonderful record that he's already achieved. And of course, putting her in the Supreme Court would almost soften were he to leave, because we'd end up with a conservative majority on the court. So they will do everything. I mean, they're an evil party. They're the America Socialist Party. And there is nothing underhanded that they will not pull to try to stop Amy Coney Barrett's election to the Supreme Court before Mr. Trump's term ends. So we haven't seen the half of it yet. It will continue going on. The president is totally in the right with the Constitution. He has every right to do it. The Senate has every right to move it through and vote on it. But what we don't know are the further shenanigans they will pull. And the idea of him getting the China virus is, again, just a smoke screen, using that as a reason, oh, the man is sick, we shouldn't be doing anything so serious under these circumstances. It's all lies, it's all wrong, it's all politics. And, you know, I really think most right-thinking Americans will recognize it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, and there's why they're doing all this, they're sending their sympathies over, if you can reconcile the two of those points there. But anyways, you know, Jay, with the Supreme Court now, you just said the key thing. Like, I think most Americans are realizing, or wondering, worrying maybe is a better way to say it, how many more October surprises there'll be before the election. And there will be more to come out on this. But having said that, it's hard to know whether they're going to get this through. I mean, the real bottom line is to have that ninth justice in there is probably, as the president has pointed out, vitally key as this thing begins to look more and more, which we'll talk about next, in fact, of whether this thing has to go to the Supreme Court to decide the election. And, you know, Jay, that's a real possibility. I mean, it could very well happen. That in itself would be reason enough to get that justice in there. But I would suspect they're going to pull out some more surprises before this thing gets to a final confirmation. Do you think McConnell truly can be successful with getting this through and voted on and confirmed and have her seated by the election?
Well, it certainly can be done. He is not what I call a strong conservative Republican, so that he's not the person I would choose to do it, but that's his seat and that's his responsibility. It definitely can be done. And I think in one's heart of hearts, he knows how important it is, recognizing that Mr. Trump could lose the election. This would be a feather in his cap. It would be more to the wonderful legacy of Mr. Trump's 4 years. So I think it can be done, but I'm less pessimistic than you with regard to the election ending up in the Supreme Court and that chair being a deciding factor. I actually don't think the election is going to be as close as that. Again, I'm not sure who's going to win, but I don't think it's going to be that situation where it could eventually move to Mrs. Pelosi being president while they decide other stuff. I think the margin of victory will be significant, but I don't think we're going to end up in the Supreme Court. But that's clearly something that worries them, and that's why they're going to do every underhanded thing they can in the next 3 weeks to stop it.
You're thinking that whatever America decides, it's going to decide almost exclusively, for whatever reason. You just feel like that's the way the wind is blowing right now, the political winds, huh?
That's exactly the way I feel. And I've talked to many, many people. I don't think there are many votes up in the air right now. I think you have the Trump base. You have people that do not want to see the country become socialist. You have the liberals that theirs is a socialist religion. I don't think there are many votes that are going to be changing in the next few weeks. There are not as many what you call real independents out there. People call themselves an independent. That they think that sounds like they're good and they're above the fray. But I don't believe that. So I think we're going to find the majority of the people are okay with a socialist nation that gives them everything. They don't have a good sense of history of that socialism only succeeds with tyranny and a gun to people's heads. And then I think there's also a huge number of people that do know and don't want to let these evil people in. So, yes, I think the decision in the election will go 3 or 4 percentage points one way or the other. It's not going to come down to the Supreme Court.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you think this COVID thing right now with the president contracting that, I mean, does it help or hurt the president right now, Jay?
Well, it doesn't make a lot of difference, but it certainly helps a little bit. You all of a sudden see Trump as a human being. You know, a lot of people see him, you know, setting himself above people. Actually, he is the best president for the people we've had in my lifetime. But I think you can't feel anything but concern for the president having the disease. It, as we all mostly know, it's not as bad as the flu. It's not much worse than a very bad cold. So generally, for a healthy person without a pre-existing condition, it's not by any means life-threatening. So I think most people probably realize his life is not in danger, but at the same time, it makes him more one of us. So I think it can, to the extent it has any effect, it will be a little bit positive.
You know, you just said something that got me thinking there, Jay, when you just said that, and I haven't heard you quite put it that way before, where you said, well, he is, I think you said the words, maybe the best president in your lifetime. Now, you are a very politically astute man. You have followed this all your life, and you watch all the in-ins and going on of the political stuff. Why do you make that? Do you really believe, is that heartfelt from you? Why do you say that?
Well, I was born in the FDR era. Harry Truman then was took over, and he was a good president, probably the most honorable person in my lifetime, but he didn't do as many effective things to help the population, because there was FDR had done so many bad things. You know, he extended the Depression by 4 or 5 years, was part of getting the war going with Japan, really to pull us out of it. But since Mr. Truman, pretty much every president except Gerald Ford had some kind of a mandate from an exclusive group of people, save Ronald Reagan. And so none of them really went into office with the idea, how can I make life better for the American people, save Ronald Reagan. And many of them were as criminal as Joe Biden is. You know, LBJ was a criminal. Biden is a criminal. Kennedy did a lot of good things, but his presidency was not near as successful. You know, had he not died the way he did, he would not be as revered as he is as a president, because his record was really not that good.
Yeah, very, very interesting what you say there. Before we move on to ballot harvester, and I want to talk about this with listeners here, I want to bring in Tom Harris, Simone, because I want him to reflect on this for a couple of reasons I'll tell you here. Tom is the executive director of the Canada-based International Climate Science Coalition. And Tom, you know, looking at this from abroad, from another country, you hear what Jay says. And, it was interesting to me when he put Trump in that category, because I don't think he would say that if he really didn't mean it. I mean, truly, that was remarkable to me. What is your sense from abroad how people perceive the president and in that regard? And how does this COVID impact things with him contracting? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with Jay that indeed Trump has been an exceptional president. From an international perspective, I think that the best thing he's done is standing up to China. I mean, you might have noticed that he gave an exceptional speech by video to the United Nations about how we have to hold China accountable. And of course, he's boosting American mining. He's going to be boosting, we think, a lot of American industry and bringing back from China many of the industries that have gone there. And I hope especially pharmaceuticals. So I think within Canada and abroad, we have two very different points of view. We have those who have the Trump derangement syndrome, which I'm sure you've heard of, where they can't see the good things that he's doing. People who just don't like him personally and so are completely emotionally overwhelmed to the extent that they can't see these good things that he's doing. I think you have a lot of quiet people, though, within the population who are not speaking out. And certainly I talk to many people who very much support Trump and hope that he wins. So, you know, unfortunately, the loud people, the ones that are politically correct, following our press, are against Trump. But I think there's a huge undercurrent of support for the president. And I also think that him getting COVID is going to help that. Just like Jay said, people will feel a certain degree of sympathy and maybe then more likely to speak out and say, yeah, and he's been a pretty good president to this point.
Well, that's an excellent analysis, Tom. Thank you. All right. Well, stay right there, Tom. And I want to come back, talk about that energy bill in just a moment. But let me first tell folks here, you may not even be aware of this out there, but let me just tell you now, regarding this ballot harvest and business here, which is vitally important to the election. The Supreme Court on Friday agreed to consider the legality of the voting rules in Arizona that prohibit third parties from delivering early voting ballots and to also disallow in-person ballots that are submitted in the wrong precinct. So they have agreed to now hear this, and this could have some really implications on the race, I believe. Now, in the voting case, Arizona in 2016, by the way, enacted a law that barred get out the vote operatives. And this is what ballot harvesting is all about, as you know, out there. They go out and they collect and they do all kinds of things, rummage through trash cans, mailboxes, back doorways, whatever have you. And then they submit these ballots. And this is already happening. And I'll give you a couple of examples in just a moment all over the nation here. Well, Republicans have labeled the practice, again, as what we've called ballot harvesting, and that it's ripe for fraud. You've heard President Trump come out on this many, many times as a big concern here. You got to remember, people, some of these elections in some of these states, he only won some of these by, 30, 40,000 votes. I mean, you got some of these that are razor thin. It wouldn't take a hell of a lot to flip those states the other way, and in which case you'd have a different president today had that happened, what we're speaking about right now in the last election, to the degree of what we're talking about here. So this is a big story, which is why the Supreme Court has ruled to look at this case in Arizona here. Now, Democrats, they say such third-party collections, well, they provide needed assistance, That's usually the warm and fuzzy statement coming from the left to voters who face hurdles in navigating the system. You can't make this stuff up. That is their, that's the same reason, you don't even have to have an ID to vote, according to them, or anything else. There's no priority put on our voting system from the left. They just want anybody and everybody in any capacity, even dead people, to vote. They're happy to have them all here. It's pretty wild here. But there are specifically three key predominantly Democrat-controlled swing states. And we say Democrat-controlled, the local leadership is Democrat. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. And there are now court decrees in each of these that prohibit election officials from beginning to process the mail-in votes until November 3rd. That's the problem. So accordingly, close national election results would be highly uncertain until all those votes are tallied, which the concern for this is that we won't know the winner until, by golly, days, weeks afterward. I don't really know. We're in some uncharted waters here. We really don't know. This doesn't appear to be a normal election, Jay.
Well, Malcolm, I think it's really been a problem for a lot longer than you realize. John Fund, a previous writer for the Wall Street Journal, wrote a book about over 10 years ago on voter fraud. It's been rampant through the country for decades. Maybe it's a little more organized now, and maybe it's focused, as you say, on those swing states more than ever. And I certainly recognize that it will be many days after November 3rd till a lot of votes are counted. But again, I don't think, I believe the election will be decided on November 3rd, because I think the difference between the two parties will be such that people will recognize that these increased need to count other votes isn't going to change the outcome. But I do think that in the next 3 weeks, everything the conservatives can do to stifle the ability of the Democrats to do illegal things, which is certainly their intent, though they wouldn't admit that, to bring in votes that should not be counted on their side. So we definitely have a problem, and we need to be working to defend against it as best we can. But I'm convinced it will not decide the election.
Well, there's this energy bill in the proposed energy bill in the Senate that I want to talk to you about. So there's a new powerful lobby group called the American Clean Power Association. And like everything with the far left, you know, green is yellow, yellow is purple, yes is no, and, you know, an hour is 5 hours. You know, nothing is what it appears, people. It's like that rearview mirror in your car. Things never are what they are. They may appear closer, in fact. Watch out, you know. So listen to this now. The American Wind Energy Association is planning to merge with this new lobby group with the goal of propelling renewables to the dominant power source in America. And this all came out in a letter, by the way, in September 3rd. Okay, Dr. J, why is this a concern for us? And what is the real concern with this energy bill getting passed? And what kind of damage are we talking here?
Well, it started out as a geothermal bill up in Alaska to give money to those that harvest real hot water deep in the earth from, you know, molten rock. There's water that goes down, is heated up by the molten rock. Can be brought up to the surface, and a great deal of energy can be drawn from the hot water. And actually started out as quite a good bill, because where we do use geothermal in the northwest of the United States, it's been quite successful. It doesn't exist in many parts. So it was a bill that was basically focused on Alaska and a few other areas. And it was hijacked by the wind and solar people to basically write in more and more largesse for the wind and solar, which wouldn't exist at all were it not for the government subsidies it currently gets. They were not satisfied with this and they want more. And the importance of it is if the steamroller of wind and solar gets any more powerful and reduces our ability to use our vast quantities of fossil fuel, throughout the nation, we'll see our energy costs triple for sure within a few years, and we'll see the kind of blackouts that California's been experiencing in greater quantities all over the nation. We cannot continue an industrial society without fossil fuels. We have to have more fossil fuels to back out wind and energy that are simply not dependable, not available all the time, and in fact, very expensive. So the bill is a wolf in sheep's clothing, and people are afraid that it could get through the House and Senate. And with all the things on Mr. Trump's plate, they worry that he might sign it. I'm not worried that he would sign it, but I understand the fear. And in any case, every yard they gain in this terrible piece of legislation works against the American people.
You know, a lot of this legislation that's put out there, it always is the sheep and wolves story, because they load these bills up with so much ridiculous stuff and nothing is what it appears. Politics is a sad state, actually. Tom, this bill, I mean, I have a hard time thinking this would get anywhere near the president's pen. But I guess it's possible. I mean, I can't imagine also that the people, I mean, well, you know, I say this and then Tom, and quite frankly, part of the Biden campaign with Sanders and the AOC people there is the Unity Task Force, which is absolutely part of the program. Now, Biden lied about all that. I mean, he blatantly lied to the American people at the debate about that. Yeah, what do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, you know, and this is all on their website. There's the Unity Task Force. So I say that and the caveat, but, you know, I got to tell you, if Biden ever got this, and I don't believe that's going to happen, that we could be in a heap of trouble. So I guess that's a point to what Jay's talking about on this particular bill, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And we have to remember that Joe Biden, his plans are to have a $2 trillion energy plan pushing us to these renewable energy sources, supposedly to eliminate carbon dioxide emissions from the power sector by 2035, $2 trillion. Now, you know, people have to realize that these are not really clean energy sources at all. In fact, in our article, we quote Dr. Ben Zeiker with the American Enterprise Institute. He says, clean power is not clean, okay? And he points out that it actually creates heavy metal pollution, noise, flicker effects, solar panel waste, wildlife destruction. I mean, you look at California alone, there's one wind turbine farm, and farm is the wrong term, really, because they're certainly not farms. But the Altamont Pass has killed thousands of golden eagles since it was first erected. So indeed, you know, these kinds of energy sources are anything but clean. But what's happened is a very powerful lobby group, just like you described, have actually hijacked parts of this bill. They're trying to force in an amendment which would turn the bill from largely a good bill, which was, as Jay talked about, geothermal, to a very much an energy and wind focused bill. So it's important that people, you know, speak out to their senators and say, no, no, we don't want this. We want to actually have a good energy source.
So, Jay, to that point here, what do we need to do about it as people, as Americans? What should people do?
Well, everybody should find out about the bill, get the number of the bill and write their senators and say, don't let this bill get through the Senate, whether it's while Trump is president or after Trump is not president, because right now, Malcolm, every bit of wind and solar energy in this country, you're paying 50% of the costs of doing it. You and me and Tom and everybody listening to this program, our taxes are subsidizing overall all the wind and solar in the country to 50 cents on the dollar. If the tax subsidies were to go away tomorrow, the wind and solar energies would end within a few weeks, unless they're on long-term contracts, because they cannot exist without tax money supporting them. They've never gotten any better. They've never gotten any more dependable. And yet the Congress has over and over again re-upped these subsidies. This bill is a new way of pouring money in into those both of those industries and hiding it in this geothermal bill. And therefore, because it has a different look to it, there are very few people in the Senate that really understand energy as I do and other scientists do. And so they're more likely to say, oh, this looks pretty good and go along with it. So we need the public to get involved in really going against it and telling their senators, we don't need any more subsidies really for any energy. We would be better off in this country if we stopped subsidizing 100% of energy, let it all work to its own benefit in a free market.
This article that Dr. Jay Lehrer and Tom Harris put out there is called Citizens Must Speak Out Against Dangerous Energy Bill. It is front and center on AmericaOutloud.com. You can get it there. There is a link at the bottom of that, and I'll give you that website right now. It's very simple. It's just it's a well-known site. It's contactsenators.com. And there's a link right in that article as well for you to do that. It's a great read, but it also just informs you of what the dangers are here. Again, you never really know what's going to happen. 10 and 6, remember, on Sunday, you'll hear this great news magazine. And it goes to podcast again Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, just after 2 p.m. You'll see it on all podcast networks worldwide and at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. A tremendous thank you here to all of our guests here on the program on Viewpoint this Sunday. And thank you again, friends, for being with me on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.